Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, my guests this morning are a father and son who have come into studio to share their experiences of caring for a loved one who was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia at a very, very, very all too early young age. Keelan and Eben Stewart, you're very, very welcome.
Thank you,
Deirdre.
Thank you for having us in.
Keelan, I'm going to start with you. Why don't you just maybe let us know, who are you here to present and honour today?
So I'm here on behalf of my two other brothers. I'm the one in the middle. We're going to be running the Dublin Marathon in October. We've been fundraising since, I think, March for Alzheimer's Society of Ireland because, yeah, our mum was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, at only 49. It's a charity that was really close to us. And beforehand as well, like, we saw ourselves as a very normal family, and we very quickly took up the roles of family carers. And
at a very young age.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, like, I was doing my leaving cert, my older brother was finishing his master's, my younger brother, I think he didn't have the junior cert that year with COVID, but yeah, I think I'm also kind of speaking on behalf of family carers and all that kind.
Your mum, Sandrine, she's just 53. She's in full-time care at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's up in Bloomfield Hospital. She, you know, we're incredibly lucky that she is in full-time care. There are, you know, families in Ireland that don't, you know, not even in dementia related illnesses,
just
like
generally.
In most illnesses, they don't have those facilities. And we are incredibly lucky as well that the hospital's a 20-minute walk away, so it is still like our mum's at home. You can just go and walk up, and we know she's in the best of care and the best of hands. I think my dad has more friends up in the home than my mum does. He goes in and he's laughing
in
with all the patients, and everyone there is lovely.
Evan, I know that there will be times in this conversation where we are going to be speaking about the before times. I suppose perhaps there is a before the diagnosis, there's an after the diagnosis. And I know you're both very keen to highlight how Sandrine is and has always been at the heart of your family. But before we get to talk about her family life, Evan, how did you meet this remarkable French woman and steal her back home to Ireland?
Yeah, it started in 1991. It was my, I had just qualified as a teacher. It was my first job. It was in Guildford in Surrey in the UK. So I just started the job, first term, and this wonderful French language assistant arrived in. I was 24, she was 20. And things moved on fairly quickly. Now, there was a fair bit of competition in the staff room, as you can imagine, for her attention. But I think it was November of that year, I invited her to a housewarming Halloween party. And I didn't think she'd come, you know, because it was a bit of a distance, but she did. And that was it.
And you worked?
We from there on, 1991, November, that was the start of...
And you worked that Irish charm so successfully that you managed to get a wedding ring on her finger.
That was 97.
97.
Yeah. So we lived in England till 97, quite happily. You know, we had a great life in Guildford, moved into London. And once we got married, we just said, look, I think it'd be good to go back home, go back to Ireland anyway, and start a family there.
And so, having a family was really important to her.
Oh, very important, yeah. So we did stay one more year after getting married, and then 98 we moved back to Ireland, and we moved back without jobs.
What was it about her, Evan? What was it about her that drew you to her?
She was gorgeous. She was beautiful, funny, just, yeah, she, you know, for me, I suppose, exotic in sense she was French, you know, and oh wow, no, the accent. And
no one from Wexford had ever met a French person before.
No, like, oh my God, this, you know, bringing back a French person, a French girl, she was just perfect. So it was great, yeah.
And you had three boys.
Yeah, so once we came back, we came back without jobs. We just decided, no, we're coming back. You know, the lifestyle was important to us. It was a a big decision. And we luckily just found jobs. I ended up with a job just down the road in a boys' secondary school, and Sandrine was teaching French in a bilingual section in a school in Black Rock. So we were very lucky, we fell on our feet there. And then Louis arrived in 2000, Keelan in 2002, and Oscar in 2005. So it was all, it all happened quite quickly then, you know, and then everything changes and your whole focus is on the boys and the family. And Sandrine gave up teaching. She kept teaching after Louis, and then when you were born, because you were a handful.
I was just going to say, it was probably a full-time job. Keelan, you say your mum was a lady. She was in a house full of all of these lads. Were you quite demanding on her?
Oh, I definitely think so. Especially, I think me being stuck in the middle, you know,
the middle child syndrome.
Yeah, but there were times where, you know, Louis, like, I was never that aggressive, but like, there would be times where we'd be outside playing.
I feel poor Louis's not here to defend himself.
We always joke about it. Like, we'd be outside playing and we'd be playing football with all our friends, and I'd be the goalkeeper, so I'd be the referee, and someone would foul Louis and Louis wouldn't like it. I would say it's not a foul, and then Louis would start chasing me because he's really annoyed, and then one of my friends would start chasing Louis to defend me because I wouldn't fight back. And then it was you, my dad and my mom watching out the window waiting for Louis to pounce. So I think
was she like a classic nearly Irish mommy settling piece?
Yeah, and you know, the French accent probably you know the French accent probably made it a bit more stern, but she was
just so dedicated to the boys. And you know, we
was it frantic those early days, Evan? Was it, you know, mad with
no,
the house?
No, because Sandrine had a discipline about the house. You know, it was so well run, and like eating, because of the French side, eating was really important.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the boys had to have their three courses every lunch. They'd have to have three courses. There'd have to be fruit. There'd have to be a main course, and there'd have to be a dairy. So that was, you know, she was just so...
So she had her, like, an articulate system.
Oh, God, yeah. There was a definite system.
when...
And that system,
where
no matter
did
where
fit in
we
in
went,
the system?
No matter where we went, you know, if we were on holidays, there had to be the three courses. So, you know, she knew that, you know, and it was just a general, her, you know, her focus on nutrition and the well-being of the boys was always just number one, you know.
Well, like when we would be younger playing football, it would be, guys, I'm going in for my dinner. Keelan, it takes you an hour to eat your dinner because I have to do all my courses.
Yeah.
But like, even when we go back to France, like I was back there maybe last month, it's just, you know, the dinners take quite a while, you know. We did have very much the French influence growing up.
And we still, like in the evening, people would ring me and I'd say, look, I'm just about to start the dinner at 8:30. So we still, there's still that element that she's left behind that we still follow that. Yeah. That system.
And as a couple, as a married couple, what were you like as a team?
I think we kind of just mutually, there was just a symbiosis in the terms that I knew my role, Sandrine had her role, and it worked quite seamlessly, really. You know, I was more the kind of, I suppose I was in charge of bringing the lads to their sport. Sandrine was at home and you know, getting that three course dinner or lunch ready.
Listening to you both, Keelan, it sounds like your mum was very very engaged and present in your lives and with what you were doing. That was her focus.
Yeah, like I think, like, every morning she'd wake up with us, make us our breakfast when we were really young. And then even when I was in secondary school, maybe I was in third or fourth year, and Oscar, my younger brother, started going into secondary school, she was still waking up with us. Now, we were a lot more independent, but she just was still wanting to be there for us, see us off, all that kind of stuff.
And I know that, Keelan, music and laughter was a big, big part of her life. A secret ABBA fan?
Well, like, I knew she was always a big fan of Mamma Mia. I remember when our French granny came over, they wouldn't really be the biggest fan of... But she loved Mamma Mia, and Mama also did. And it's only now we've kind of really brought it back to life where, you know, she's in the home and she might not be very talkative or communicative, and we turn on ABBA and out of nowhere she knows all the words and she's there singing Dancing Queen and all that kind of stuff. It just, the music makes everything click again.
And Evan, she took up dancing at one point. Was that?
The dance was more before the kids. You know, she was big into her dance in France before she came to the UK, but she always loved it. And it's kind of in her family as well. So music and dance, yeah, she loved that. And she did, when she came to Ireland, I think she did get involved in aerobics and that kind of, but nothing too formal. But yeah, music was always on in the kitchen, and yeah. And it's funny how now it sparks certain emotions with her. You know, we have to kind of be careful that sometimes, you know, we put a piece of music on that we think is really going to get her up and, or at least wake her up, and it'll bring tears because she has an awareness that it'll bring back a memory. And you just, you know, we just have to sometimes gauge what mood is there, you know.
And she was very dedicated to creating and preserving memories as her stack of VHS tapes of your family life when the boys were small.
Yeah, that's a job that I have on the back burner, to put all that on a disc or put it in a cloud. I think that's what they do now. Yeah, I mean, there is an attic full of photos from, you know, everything was recorded. Christmas Day, Sandrine would have had the boys waiting on the stairs. Santa had arrived, but the boys couldn't come downstairs until she'd set the camera up, the video camera up, and it was like, you know, and if it didn't happen the way she wanted it to happen, they'd have to go back up the stairs and
you'd
do
have
it again.
Take two of the Santa surprise.
And the boys were just bursting to get in, you know. So, she just loved recording. And it came from her mum. Like when we go to France, she has everything catalogued. Her mum has everything catalogued. And it's just a fantastic resource, a family resource that we have of the French family and our family.
Yeah. And Caelan, the joys, you know, on one level, they sound like very, very simple joys, but it's actually, in light of what happened to your mum, very, very profound. Is it painful for you to reflect back on those memories?
I think it kind of flares up in kind of moments where she was very present, like kind of talking about the photos and stuff. Like, it was my birthday back in May, and my mum would be there with the photo camera, and she'd make sure, okay, we've got a photo with all the boys, now we need a photo with, like, she would try and get every combination of photo possible, but like, we would still sing Happy Birthday, and then we always still sing Joyeux Anniversaire. And that's kind of where it kind of flares up, we're all singing, and it's kind of, like, which is strange because it's in memory of her, but she's still very much alive, but she's not at home, you know, and we still very much appreciate that we can go and see her every day, but at home it's kind of, it's just that little moment. When
I think it's, you know, it's this idea of ambiguous loss that, you know, Sandrine left the house in 2022. And I thought at the time it was like she was going to hospital and she'd be back. But that was it. She's never come back since. You know, she went straight from Talla into Bloomfield. And that idea, you know, people say there are two, you know, people who have lost somebody close to them. And then there's people who haven't, you know, who have yet to lose somebody. But we're in the middle. You know, there's that ambiguity about our loss because Sandrine is still physically present. But at home, she's not at home, you know.
She is here, but the version of her that you knew and loved is not here.
It's common, again, to highlight that this is what a lot of people experience. You know, there's so many people whose loved ones are in nursing homes, who have dementia. My mum, she's in a nursing home in Wexford with Alzheimer's. So I have ambiguous loss there because my mum is also, the last visit we had, she didn't recognize me, you know. So there's loss there. So it's a unique type of loss, ambiguous in the sense that it's hard to define, but it's there and it's always there.
And can I bring you back, Evan, to you know, because when you look at the progression of Sandrine's illness, first Parkinson's, then Lewy body disease, she was very young. She was in her 40s. And obviously yeah. there was a lead up period to that time. And if it's okay for you to discuss it, I know that like many marriages, it wasn't without its challenges, and you'd suffered pregnancy loss, which had had a profound impact on you both.
Yeah, see, the three lads were born, the pregnancies, as, you know, it's easy for me to say that they were, you know, they were straightforward. But, you know, after 2005, we were hoping to have maybe a little girl. We were hoping to have
boys.
Yeah, we were hoping to have more kids. And Sandrine had three miscarriages fairly close together. And it had a profound effect on her. She really did, was actually traumatised. You know, it was an extreme. She was really, really upset by it, which brought on anxiety. You know, and she was between 2005 and 2015, there was 10 years there of miscarriages and a growing anxiety. And, you know, we didn't know at the time. It was just, oh, the miscarriages have caused this anxiety. And the treatments weren't really working. And the anxiety was just becoming a crippling anxiety.
And this will, you know, I think many people will resonate with this. Obviously, when you've got older people who are diagnosed with conditions such as dementia, you know, those early warning signs, you know, mood behaviours, you know, changes in behaviours, anxiety, depression can be likened to it. You know, I know that often people say there are similarities, certainly between those conditions. What was it that led you to seek the help of a neurologist? What symptoms, you know, physically or otherwise, was Sandrine experiencing that made you think this might be something more?
The anxiety was growing and not responding to treatment, but we dealt with that. And then what we noticed was the shuffling gait. So her walk started to change. So little short steps, and she wasn't swinging her arms. And then there was a tremor, a resting tremor. So when she'd be at rest, she'd be shaking. And initially the doctor was saying, well, that tremor is linked to her anxiety. But as it got worse and worse and wasn't again responding to any kind of treatment, we got the referral and got the diagnosis then in 2017 when she was 45. And, you know, for 2 years there, it was a devastating diagnosis, as Parkinson's is, you know, Sandrine, we just didn't know what to do. But she was starting to adapt to the medication, the levodopa, and it was her condition was responding to the medication and exercise.
It felt like we completely forgot about, like, there was a stage where Mama felt fine, like she lost a lot of weight, but she didn't tremor, she didn't...
Yeah, you know, life was starting to return to normally-ish as much as you can, but the medication for Parkinson's is very, you know, it's very time-sensitive. So the day was very regulated by medication and eating at the right time. But then, I suppose, and it just happened to coincide with COVID and lockdown, 2019, 2020, where cognition, you know, you just started to realise there's something not quite right.
And Keelan, what were you observing, you and your brothers, you know, because, you know, your mum's behaviour is changing. What was it, you know, was she trying to shield you from it, or what were you observing as young kids in that house?
I think definitely in the Parkinson's days, she was trying to hide, like if she was making her medication up, she would do it hiding in the room and stuff. And we just never really spoke about it, because I think our mum is always very health conscious. We knew she was like uncomfortable talking to it about it with us. And then when lockdown happened, we were a lot more at home, you know, school at home, and there were the like panic attacks and hallucinations she was having. Like I remember during I think it was before my winter exams or during my mocks, I remember she had these big hallucinations and she was very scared and stuff. And then it was just, I think the big problem was she just couldn't understand her medication, you know, 7 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock. She just couldn't understand it. And I'd be getting texts in the middle of school, but when I was in sixth year, I'd be getting texts and phone calls can I take my medicine now? No, Mama, you're okay. Just relax. But she just couldn't.
And was that decline, was that, you know, including hallucinations, which is obviously one of the symptoms, was that frightening? Well, you've said it was frightening for your mum, but was that frightening for you?
There was one evening where she, like, I think it was just me upstairs and her upstairs, and she was screaming in the bathroom because she saw this man in her bathroom, and I had to go, and like, it was a really, like, I've never heard someone scream that scary. And then so I had to go, and she was like, there's a man in my bathroom. And I thought there was, but I knew it was a hallucination. But then after that, I think that was kind of, we were like, okay, these are bad. And then I think now her hallucinations are a bit more peaceful. Like, I know she always hallucinated a dog, which was lovely because we don't have a dog and we all love dogs at the house. So they started simmering.
It's one of the symptoms of Lewy body dementia that differentiates it from
other forms.
Alzheimer's. It might, with Alzheimer's late on, the psychosis might occur. But it starts with benign hallucinations. So, you know, a coat on the stairs would be a person, or there'd be animals running through the kitchen, or little children, and they were benign, they were okay, they were safe. But it increasingly, there was people that started, and they were scary for her, and we got treat. That's when we thought, there's something different here. This is not Parkinson's.
And obviously a diagnosis did come of Lewy body dementia and an acceleration, Evan, of her symptoms, and that must have been very, very difficult for you. How were you managing? You know, three boys, a wife,
yeah,
who was ill,
and Gran.
Exactly the same time my mum was going through her challenges with dementia. It was a tough time, and initially, you know, it was lockdown, it was tough for everyone, but you know, you'd kind of say, is this because of our situation, you know, that the fact that we're all locked in, that her condition was flaring up as such, so it was difficult to access, you know, treatment at that time. But you know, things were definitely off the charts, as such as her symptoms were getting worse and worse.
And the tragedy, considering what you so clearly described, is that system for someone to lose that that cognition and executive capacity.
I was just about to say that was probably, on top of the psychosis, the executive functioning was completely all over the place. So, you know, she was such an organized person, full, you know, lists, and everything was run so well. And suddenly you're realizing that washing machine is taking an hour to sort out, or the dinner was taking much longer. And
you're trying not to be critical, probably. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the symptoms too, is a denial. You know, it was very difficult. There was a lot of conflict there, which was not part of our family. There was never conflict, but it was so hard.
Evan, were you thinking, sorry to cut across there, but, you know, often, particularly for, you know, women who are going through perimenopause or menopause, and there could be brain fog, and there could be maybe other symptoms, there could be anxiety or whatever. Were you thinking, as a husband, before it got really, really pronounced, is this a midlife thing? Is this a relationship thing? Like, what was going through your head?
Well, very, very definitely, because, you know, as far as I was concerned, you know, I was always somebody who wanted to know what was happening, you know, because information and knowledge is key. So I knew a lot about Parkinson's, but I'd never gone further. And it's called Parkinson's disease dementia, or Lewy body dementia. You know, I wasn't aware that was something that could happen. I was aware that it could happen later on, possibly, like it can happen to anyone. But these symptoms were, and again, I was putting it down to maybe, a menopause, or it could have been just the fact that we were all locked into the house, and I was teaching online, and, you know, and the lads were meant to be learning online. So we were kind of up and down.
And Caelan, it's hard to imagine, you know, because you were, and you remain, you were young carers, you know, you and your brothers, probably one of the most difficult decisions or points in with these conditions is when someone has to go into care. And as you said, not everyone gets the full supports. But What is life like with your mum now when you go in to see her? I know she still disapproves of you swearing.
Yeah, she, like, and that's the thing is, like, I think, like, our grand, a bit late stage now, our mum is definitely late stage. Our gran will still talk. She might not recognise us. Like, with Maman, she won't talk. She doesn't really have that ability, but I still know she's very much there. Like, I'll go up, if I'm visiting her by myself, I'll go up and tell her all the gossip, all the news that's happening in my life. And if it's really sad, she'll cry. If it's funny, I know she'll laugh. She won't react, she won't respond or anything, but we still have the little moments every son and mum should have, you know. But yeah, no, the visits are, and you know, if she's very sleepy, some days, it was only my dad who told me she loves Peter Kay. When I put Peter Kay on, it just clicks. She wakes up, and there was one time where she was laughing so hard, I thought she was crying. Like, I'd never seen her, like, even in her full of her health, I had never seen her laugh so hard. Mm. And it's just nice. And, like, of course, you have then those really bad days where she's sleepy, might not respond to me at all. But those bad days make the good days so much better when I get to see just a little smile or I get a little kiss on the cheek or something. It just makes them so special. And she still very much knows her role. Yeah. If Louis goes and gives out to me, she'll wake up and give him a stern word and then go back to sleep.
She still has the death stare. If raised the eye.
If anyone steps out of line, Evan, 28 years married this year. And you,
Last week. Yeah.
And you think back on those vows, you know, richer or poorer, in sickness and in health to the days of your lives. And obviously, your marriage has changed. How has your love for Sandrine transformed in this moment? Because she's still with us.
Oh, she's still there. Yeah, and I'm always conscious of talking about her in the present as she's still with us. And as we say, there's every visit is different. You know, yesterday she was asleep for most of it, but then woke up around 6 o'clock. I like to give her her dinner. So there's an intimacy there that, you know, you're feeding because, you know, she can't feed herself.
And she still knows who you are.
And she still knows, she's very much aware of who I am. And it's just the physical contact. I'd hold her hand and just be there, be present for her. And I don't like to think about her during the day or the night, you know, how she must feel, you know, that she's separated from us, whether she's aware of that. But with Louis' body as well, Alzheimer's patients tend to lose their awareness, while Louis' body, the patient can remain very much self-aware all the way through. So she's aware of what's going on. So it's important that I'm there holding her hand and visiting her every day.
I wanted to share with you just, we've had an incredible response from our listeners. Pat, such a beautiful interview, true love. Congratulations to you, Eben and Keelan, for their courage and good cheer in the face of such a terrible illness. That's from Brian in Kildare. To hear your guests speaking, you can feel the love and pride they have, but it's heartbreaking too. Such a courageous family. And another one of our listeners, Maria, said, listening to this father and son in tears, once my mum went into a nursing home and I didn't like visiting our family home, but I soon realised that a home is built on love and presence, and they say that your love is so obvious. Keelan, it takes courage to come and share a story such as this, but there's a reason why you have done. I know that you've been trying to immerse yourself, you and your brothers, in positive action to channel what you're going through. I know you mentioned you're going to be running the Dublin Marathon. Why are you running it? What do you want people to take away from, or what awareness is it that you're trying to raise?
Yeah, I think the kind of main thing was to give back to Alzheimer's. Like, at the time, like, again, like, my dad's teaching, I was in school. Like, I remember my dad kind of thinking, look, I might have to take a career break here. This was back in the earlier days. And then when my mum got diagnosed, they came in and gave us so much support, and I can't, like, really reiterate how important those carers were and how lovely they were, and they just became part of our family. I'd go downstairs and have my breakfast with them and my mum.
They've become part of your family.
Yeah. And, like, I think I can't remember. And then it's also during my time of caring for my mum, especially in school, you kind of feel a bit estranged or a bit bizarre. Like, you kind of start thinking, who's going home from school today looking after their mum with dementia? And I think it's to raise support for other family carers, because we're incredibly lucky that we got the care we needed. My mum is in a brilliant hospital, and my granny, we could afford to send her to a nursing home. There are families out there in, and I think our entire family have turned into family carers again. Like, our granddad cares for our granny, my uncle Keir and my cousins Rena and Lorcan, they cared for my auntie Helen, who sadly passed away from cancer. So, like, all of us are carers, and I think it's to raise awareness of how many family carers there actually are in this country.
And there are so many, and Evan, finally, like so many family carers, they become incredible advocates. And I know that advocating for Sandrine, but for many people in her position, has become a core part of what you do now.
Yeah, I want to raise awareness for Lewy body dementia in particular, because it's the second most common form of dementia in Ireland. There's about 60,000 people with dementia, and 10,000 have Lewy body dementia, and it's a kind of a dementia that's often maybe misdiagnosed or missed because of the subtle differences between. So, you know, I gave up teaching. I resigned this year because the emotional energies that are required to teach, and I was running out of that energy. So I actually gave up teaching and became a postman out in Fonthill. Fantastic. I really enjoyed that. And it just gave me some headspace, which also gave me some time to recover myself, because I was really running low on just emotional
energy.
And
that's probably even an entirely separate program, the support that carers need from it. Keelan, very quickly, tell us, how can we find out how to support you for the marathon?
So my Instagram page, public, I have the link in there. There is, if you just Google Stewart Brothers, our fundraiser will come up, our team fundraiser. And at the moment, the brilliant Roisin O'Farrell, she's donated us one of her original paintings. It's worth about €4,250. So if anyone's looking to get a good deal on a brilliant, beautiful original painting, they can contact me on my Instagram directly. And it's great fundraising.
And Evan, there is a huge community online of people who are in the same situation as you and the boys. Where can they find information?
Yeah, I've got I just set up a Facebook group called Lewy Community Ireland. So maybe the link will be on after the show. So, or just Google Lewy Community Ireland. And there's about 40 members at the moment, but hopefully we're trying to grow that community. Or if people want to contact me by on social media, if they don't have Facebook, that'd be great.
The response from our listeners has been absolutely huge. And just one said, you're so lucky to have a wonderful wife and mother. She gave you all the wonderful grounding for your future and her brilliant sons. You know, I was just really struck by, you were saying earlier about how your mum loved ABBA and Dancing Queen. And I just thought, you know what, will we play a little song for Sandrine and maybe say goodbye to Keelan and Evan with ABBA's Dancing Queen?
Thank you.
Thank you.